Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, everyone. Please shut your mobile phones off. Thank you.
We're reading in Book 1, Canto 2, The Issue. We're coming towards the end of this canto. Last week, we read up to page 19, line 298. Quench with black despair the God-given light. So we'll start from the next line there. You think we read the next four lines? Patched not with failure, bargain, or compromise. That's where we start. In her, In her, the superhuman cast its seed. Sri Aurobindo was explaining to us how we human beings, we have to obey the earthly law, the laws of nature. But in Savitri, there's a greater force which doesn't allow her to accept those laws. She has come with the mission to change them. So we'll read on from line 290. Bom, will you begin, please? 290.
In act to form its mighty wings of wings, for speak refused to call doth not so. Oh, I find the all life to order me in growth, compound with earth, stop from the terrible list, or oh, pinch with the black despair, the God given die, accustomed to the eternal end of wood. Conscious of its divine power, test not from mortal frailty,
yes.
Frailty, pain, and
relief.
Catch not with beg your bargain or compromise, a walk she had to do, a walk to speak, writing the unfinished story of her soul. In thought and action, grabbed in nature's womb. She affected enough to close the luminous page, canceled her commerce with eternity. So I said the signature of a leaf ascent to the good balance of the world exchange.
Thank you. We are on page 19. Baum has just read lines 290. To 305. In Savitri, there is something superhuman, a seed of a greater being and race. So her spirit is not used to folding its mighty wings of dream that carry it high into the superconscious worlds. Her spirit refused to hug the common soil, to remain fixed to earth. No, it refuses to compound, to make an agreement or a compromise with earth. We might do that if we find that circumstances or fate have robbed our life of all its golden meanings. But even though she is faced with this destiny of Satyavan, that he must die, she refuses to compound with earth, and in that way have her name struck off, crossed out, in the starry list, the list of great souls carrying the truth. She will not quench the God-given light that is within her. She will not put out that light the way we quench a candle, with black despair. Her being is accustomed to the eternal and the true, and it is conscious of its divine founts, the sources of divine energy within her. So she's not asking as we human beings ask. We feel unable to bear a certain degree of pain. We will beg for relief from that pain. We will even accept unconsciousness as a relief from pain. But she doesn't ask that. She patch not. She doesn't make any compromise or agreement with failure. She's not making any bargain or compromise. She's not going to accept failure at all. Our being also has divine founts. None of us would be here if we didn't have a connection with a divine source. But we are mostly not conscious of that. Savitri has become conscious of the divine source of her being and her strength. So she's not going to compromise in any way. She has come to Earth with a work to do, a word, a new creative word to speak. And in her human life here, she's writing the unfinished story, the unfinished history of her soul. She's writing that story in thoughts and in actions that are engraved very indelibly, carved in the book of nature. Her thoughts and actions are going to have lasting consequences. And she's not going to close this page of light on which she's writing the story of her soul. She's not going to cancel her commerce, her exchange with eternity, her communication with, and what she is offering to eternity, and what eternity is offering to her. She's not going to give her signature of weak assent, weakly accepting the brute balance of the world's exchange. Round about now, it's the time when we have to give our annual reports for the expenditures of the previous year, and somebody has to sign off and say, yes, according to me, this is okay. But when she looks at this balance of the world's exchange, the exchange of forces and actions here on Earth, she's not going to sign off and say, yes, it is okay. There's something wrong with it, and she will not accept it. Amen, George.
A force in her that toiled since earth was made, accomplishing in life the great world plan, pursuing after death immortal aims,
repugned
to admit frustration's barren road, forfeit the meaning of her birth in time, obey the government of casual fact, or yield her high destiny up to passing chance. In her own self, she found her high recourse. She matched with the island law her sovereign right. Her single will opposed the cosmic rule. To stay the wheels of doom, this greatness rose.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about these lines? Sorry? Yes. It seems that there is a plan. To us, often things seem very random, as if it's all happening by chance. But according to Sri Aurobindo, there's a plan behind all this. Looking for my throat pills, but they're not here. So that in Savitri, there's a force which has been working since the very, very beginning of the creation, since the world began, since Earth was made, and that force, oh, here they are. Thank you. Just one.
Somebody showed me, and now I always have one.
Accomplishing, fulfilling in life this great world plan. This force, when it is embodied, is accomplishing in life the world plan, and when it's disembodied between births, it's still pursuing immortal aims, aims that don't die. So that force in her, repugned, we know the word repugnant, it's something that fills you with disgust, that you will not accept. So here it is used as a verb. It felt disgust. It refused to accept the role of frustration. She's not going to accept failure or defeat. That's a barren role which her spirit will not accept. She will not forfeit if you fail, or if you are proved wrong, then you may have to forfeit, to give up something. But she's not going to give up the meaning of her birth in time. She's come here for a reason. She's not just going to accept to do something because chance fact, casual fact, seems to make it necessary. She's not going to yield up her high destiny to passing chance. Why does Satyavan have to die? Who can say? It seems that he's not worthy of that, that he's a very special being. So how come he has to die? Why do human beings have to die? Very often, it seems that people leave their bodies because of passing chance. Savitri is not going to accept all that. And where is she going to turn for help? To her own self, to her own inner being. She matches against this iron law of earthly fact, her sovereign right, her divine right, her right as a ruler. The soul, the spirit, has the right to control material fact. And she is claiming that right. She's setting her single will as a single individual against the cosmic rule. There's a rule that everything that's born must die. She is opposing that rule. And this greatness, this force in her, rises up to stay, to stop the wheels of doom, of dark fate.
Lightning sketch is negated by the lightning. Pedestrian be negated by the lightning.
That's the next line which Ramanarayan is going to read for us. He's going to read it now.
Across
the awful mouth no eye can see, bearing its dreadful rule no will can tame, she faced the enemies of the universe, a heart stood in the way of the driving wheels. Its giant workings paused in front of a mind, its stark conventions met the flame of a soul.
Thank you. This news that comes to her, that the man she loves is doomed to die in 12 months' time, that's like a stroke of lightning. It's like a message from the divine. The unseen is knocking at her gates and warning her that it is time for her inner strength to wake up. It's sleeping there deep in her heart. But this great challenge forces it to wake up. Her strength has to be strong enough to bear this great blow. And these blows that come, they can kill us or they can save us. If they wake up the strength which is within us, they save us. So because this strength in her rises up, she's able to face all this cosmic machinery, all this determinism, everything that says that this is how things have to be. It's as if that machinery is a great locomotive marching forward across the awful march. We can't see it happening, no? And that's marching on a route which none of us can change. It says no will can change. At least it looks like that. Savitri faces all this inevitability of the universe, and her heart refuses it. She stands in the way of this awful march, and the machinery pauses. Its giant workings paused in front of a mind, a human consciousness. Its stark conventions met the flame of a soul. Conventions, the word means that there are things that we agree on. It's not really a law. It's not really an imperative. They're just things we agree that, oh yes, it has to be like that. And some of those conventions are very stark. But in this case, the flame of a divine soul is just barring the way and saying, no, it does not have to be like that. Lorraine. A magic leverage.
A magic leverage suddenly is caught that moves the veil, ineffable, timeless wheel. A prayer, a masquerade, a key idea can link man's strength to a transcendent force. Then miracle is made the common rule. One mighty deed can change the course of things. A lonely thought becomes omnipotent.
Thank you. This is a very, very important message that Sri Aurobindo gives us in these few lines. There's a debate amongst philosophers and others who've become aware that there seems to be a transcendent realm beyond, you can say, the boundaries of this universe. That there are some things which seem to be eternal. Perhaps we could say the notes of music, or the numerals or the laws of mathematics, of logic, and it seems then that those things cannot be changed by any human will or intention or effort. So the laws of physics, things like that, they seem to have been fixed and they can't be changed. So is it possible for us as human individuals to have any effect at all upon that transcendent realm? We may feel its action on us, but can we do anything to modify or change it? And Sri Aurobindo answers this here. He says, what can happen is that a magic leverage suddenly is caught that can link man's strength with a transcendent force. A connection can be made between a human individual and that supreme force. Because, after all, that is where we have come from. We have a link. We have to activate that link, or at least in extreme situations, we may have the possibility of activating that link and finding that magic leverage. The word leverage makes us think of the great ancient Greek engineer Archimedes. No? He said, give me a firm place to stand, a lever, a fulcrum, I can move the world. So Sri Aurobindo's talking about that kind of leverage, that firm place to stand where you can move the world. Here he says that can move the timeless will of the veiled ineffable. It seems as if the creator of this world has decided on certain rules and conditions. Can we make him change his mind? It says that we can move his will through a prayer, a master act, an act of tremendous nobility and strength, or even a tremendous idea can link man's strength to a transcendent force. And when that link is established, then miracle is made the common rule. The mother has explained about miracles. She says what we think of as a miracle means the intervention of a force from a higher plane. You drop a stone, it's going to fall. Nothing can stop it. But if somebody puts out a hand and catches it, that's the intervention of a conscious will. No? And that kind of thing can come from other planes. No? If it comes from the transcendent, then it's really a miracle. No? One mighty deed can change the course of things. Things seem to be fixed, inevitable. All the conditions are set up. It couldn't be otherwise. Something is done which changes the course of things. A lonely thought, the thought of somebody apart from the world, sending out a thought that can become all-powerful, can have an amazing effect. I feel very sure that Sri Aurobindo has intervened several times in world history like that. Yes.
Stephen Hawking.
You thought of Stephen Hawking, yeah.
Yes. In that transcending being dead, you know, I mean, somehow alive and traveling into other realms. And then
yes, this. This can happen when we go beyond our physical being. No? He was is totally handicapped physically, but he's been able to transcend that with the working of his mind and his will. He must have a very strong will. Yes.
Whether it'll happen or not.
But I've seen this happen in my own life, that a prayer and a small action was able to completely change the course of things in a most unexpected way. So I know this is true. Who is next? Sudha. Yes. Thank you. Anything to ask?
All these things, in the effect of the previous life, a lonely thought becomes omnipotent.
Now he's telling us why that needs to happen. Because here, in our material life, everything seems to be determined by nature, the laws of physics and thermodynamics and things like that, no? All now seems nature's massed machinery. She's got everything fixed. And we human beings seem to be endlessly bound to matter, to the rule of matter, as if we're the servants of material rule. If we look at it very, very strictly in a materialistic way, it seems as if everything that we think or feel or do has somehow been determined from the very beginning, from the Big Bang or however the universe began. There's this long chain, and even our personalities, what we are and who we are and how we feel, seems to be dependent on things, on the way our parents brought us up and our education and so many things. Our whole thought and attitude, everything has been fixed like that. And then we see that nature seems to have laws. Here Sri Aurobindo says they aren't laws, they're just habits. And habits can be changed, but these habits have been fixed for so long that we don't think that they can be changed. And nature is so clever. She rules her with her empire of unconscious, deft device. She's so clever, it's amazing if we go into the details of how things happen. There are certain wasps that lay their eggs in the bodies of living spiders. Normally those spiders would catch them and kill them, but somehow the wasp manages to get under the body of the spider and lay its eggs inside, and then its little ones hatch, and they've got a nice food source to help them grow. There are many such amazing things in evolution. No? There's something about the banyan tree, I think, is fertilized by a wasp. And that wasp somehow has to get its eggs inside the banyan tree's fruit. So it lays them in the flowers, and when the flowers ripen, the eggs of the wasp are there. So nature is full of these kind of deft, clever devices for getting her work done. But we say it's all unconscious. It seems to be all unconscious. Nobody has thought it out. Just nature has done it like that. No? So all these factors, the massed machinery of nature, our servitude to material rule and the long chain of determination and the habits which we think are laws and this rule of nature, all these things, and now the claim of man's free human will. We have the feeling that we can choose, that we have free will. But there are so many things determining what we decide that maybe our will isn't as free as we feel it is. No? And that's what he explains in the next sentence, that he too, a human being, is a machine. And we're all machines. And all the living creatures are machines of one kind and another. And in us, the brain just is set like that to pump out the shapes of thought. We all think similar shapes, no? A beating heart. Here's this physical heart in our breasts. Somehow it pumps out, cuts out like a pattern making machine, cuts out the molds, the patterns of emotions, so that we all feel in some similar ways. And an energy which actually is insentient, which is not really living, it doesn't have senses, somehow that fabricates in us the feeling that we have a soul. This is the perception that human beings are machines. No? And there's another two sentences. Patricia, would you read them? Or the figure of the...
Or the figure of the world reveals the signs of a tide chance, repeating her old steps in circles around matter's bound horses. A random series of inept events to which reason lends elusive sense is here. Or the empiric life's instinctive search, or vast ignorant mind's colossal work.
Thank you. So this is continuing what he says, all seems. This is the way things seem to be, and these are different explanations that human beings have given for it. No? The determination of nature's massed machinery, the automatic workings of body and brain. Another way that philosophers have explained the world, they say it's all just random. Random, chance. But this chance is tied, it is limited to a certain extent by the laws of matter. Or it may be that everything is random. Things just happen without any particular order or suitability. But our reason interprets them in a particular way. There's the image of if you hold a candle flame up to a silver plate, you will see a pattern of fine lines radiating from where the light falls. But in fact, that pattern of lines is just random all over the whole surface. It only looks like a pattern if you focus on one point that looks like the center of a pattern. So our reason perhaps does something like that. We focus it on these random events, and then we interpret them in a way that makes sense to us. No? But that sense is illusory. Or other people have said, it's just the life force. The life force always experimenting and trying things out. The empiric life's instinctive search. Or perhaps all everything that is here is the work of a vast, ignorant mind. A mind that doesn't really know what it's doing. There are philosophies, probably we could put names to the philosophers who have explained things in these ways. But then Shobindo tells us it's not quite like that. Slava, line 351, but wisdom comes. Don, would you read?
But wisdom comes and vision grows within. Then nature's instrument crowns himself for king. He feels his witnessing self in conscious power. His soul steps back and sees the light supreme. The Godhead stands behind the root machine. This truth broke in a triumph of fires. A victory was won for God in man. The deity revealed its hidden face. The great world mother now in her arose. A living choice reversed fate's old dead turn, affirmed the spirit's tread on circumstance, pressed back the senseless dire revolving wheel, and stopped the mute march of necessity. A flaming warrior from the eternal peaks, empowered to force the door denied and closed, smote from death's visage its dumb absolute and burst the bound of consciousness and time.
Thank you.
End of contemporary.
So this is a completely different view when wisdom comes.
In one vision is seeing inside.
The inner vision, which can see inside and outside. It can see the inside of the outside. But it has to grow within. We don't have it until it grows within, when wisdom comes. Then a direct knowledge, not a knowledge that comes to us through the senses or what we've been taught or what we've learned. Vision, knowing directly. The individual who was the tool, the instrument of nature, becomes able to rule nature, not just to be used. No? And this has several characteristics. He becomes aware of his own self, witnessing everything that's happening, and he becomes aware of his own conscious power, and then his soul steps back from its identification with the instrument and sees the supreme light, the light supreme, Jyoti Parasya. Sri Aurobindo's Gayatri Mantra advises us, let us meditate on that best form of the sun, the light of the supreme, which shall illumine us with the truth. And he says, he has written that while the traditional Gayatri calls for the illumination of the mind, his invocation, his Gayatri mantra, is for the illumination of all the planes and parts of the being, the light supreme, which shall illumine us with the truth. So when his soul steps back and sees that light supreme, he knows that a Godhead, a divine person, is standing behind this mass machinery of nature. In Savitri, this truth broke in a triumph of fire, of powerful energy. Through her, a victory was won for God in man. The deity, the divinity in her, revealed its hidden face, the great world mother now in her arrows. That's the power that has incarnated as Savitri, the great world mother. And the living choice of that power in Savitri reversed the cold, dead turn of fate, which says that Satyavan has to die. She's able to cancel that decision. That living choice of this woman, this human being, this divinity in a human form, affirmed the spirit's tread on circumstance, that the power of the spirit can change circumstances, and it pressed back this senseless, dire, revolving wheel of cause and effect, of endless determinism. It stopped that mute march of necessity, which says things have to be like this and cannot be changed.
What is the world mother?
What is the world mother? The mother, the world mother, if you ask me what it is the conscious force of the Supreme who has given birth to all this, loves all this, says yes to all this in the creation. The dynamic, conscious force of the supreme power, the supreme existence. If anybody has a better definition, anybody would like to say what they understand by the world mother.
Is it Prakriti or Aditi?
Prakriti and Aditi and Shakti and Ishwari, these are all labels, and maybe they denote particular functions and actions of the world mother. One label Sri Aurobindo has rather surprisingly put on her is Purushottama. Usually when we think of Purushottama, we think of a male individual. But he says the mother is the Purushottama.
Parapriti.
Sorry?
Parapriti, supreme nature.
Parapriti.
I think the world mother means specifically not the transcendent aspect, that which is beyond the cosmos, but what's caring for everything down here. This is the world mother watching us, making us move. All these sheep here, everything is happening. In other words, she no longer is the individual divine. She's become the one with the universal. The great world mother now in her arose.
That's described at the end of book 10, canto 4. This little figure of Savitri standing there facing death, and how the world mother enters into her and speaks for her. Savitri herself doesn't speak. The world mother speaks to death and says, stand aside. So there are these very, very powerful last four lines which make us think of our mother, world mother, Mira Aditi. A flaming warrior from the eternal peaks, empowered to force the door denied and closed, smote from death's visage its dumb absolute, and burst the bounds of consciousness and time. In the context of the poem, we can say that Sri Aurobindo here at the end of these introductory two cantos is telling us very, very powerfully that Savitri is going to be successful in her mission. We don't know exactly when these lines were written, or I don't know exactly when these lines were written. Probably Richard Hartz could tell us. But when we read them and when we look at the image that the mother has made for these four lines, we can't help thinking of her great action on 29th February 1956, when she's described how she found herself standing in front of a huge closed door, and she was told, "The hour has come." And then she lifted up a golden hammer and struck one blow on the door, and the door opened, and all the supramental power and force came pouring down on the earth. Karma, determinism, yes.
And the point he's making is that she is going to break.
Yes, these are part of nature's massed machinery, aren't they? This interplay of necessity and chance, which he refers to several times in the poem. What is fixed and what seems random. And then the determinisms playing within different limits. But supreme above all these is the ineffable, the Purushottama, the supreme. And he is showing us, I think it's an important part of his message, that an individual human being can link with that supreme force, because that's where all of us have come from. There's a chapter in The Life Divine about how we shouldn't feel that we are too small. We have a significance, an important role to play. And it's another theme in this poem, is the role of humanity, the role of the individual, but also the role of the human race, that we have a role to play. A responsibility. We shouldn't just accept this picture that nature gives us of being annulling man's claim of free will. Our will is one of the forces that is at play in the balance of the universe, and we may be able to tip the balance at certain points.
That section on page 666 where she tells death to stand aside.
Yes.
It's so powerful. Mm. I want to read that.
You want to read it? But it's quite long, huh?
No, it's only about half a page.
No, there's more than that.
I hail the Almighty and victorious death.
There's this beautiful description on page 664 of... Yes.
Here she really shows her power. First, she praises death. She tells him who he is, and then she tells him stand aside.
That's the descent of the Supreme Mother. But just before that, there's description of Savitri. Savitri facing death. He challenges her. He says, "Show me. If the Mighty Mother is with you, show me her face, that I may worship her." And Savitri doesn't answer him. No? A mighty transformation came on her. It's line 844. No? And the incarnation thrust aside its veil. So She's still there, a little figure in infinity, that incarnation, the human Savitri. It's standing there, and yet it's the very house of the eternal. It's housing the eternal, as if the world's center were her very soul, and all wide space was but its outer robe. And then she experiences a descent of the Supreme Divine Mother into her. And then a voice was heard. It's not Savitri who speaks. A voice was heard that says, I hail thee, almighty and victorious death. Live, death, a while. Be still my instrument. But now, O timeless mightiness, stand aside and leave the path of my incarnate force. That's Savitri. Release the soul of the world called Satyavan, freed from thy clutch of pain and ignorance, that he may stand master of life and fate, man's representative in the house of God, the mate of wisdom and the spouse of light, the eternal bridegroom of the eternal bride. And he still resists. The mother has to put her force on him. Finally, he has to run away, abandoning hope to make man's soul his prey and force to be mortal the immortal spirit. Afar he fled, shunning her dreaded touch, and refuge took in the retreating night. And then all those symbol worlds that he's been showing to Savitri, they all just dissolve. But that's still not the end.
The voice was heard, but it's speaking to her, no?
It's just heard.
Because at the 9:27, it says she spoke death unconvinced, resisted sting.
That is she, the mother, the voice.
The voice that's speaking is speaking through Savitri, no?
He doesn't say that. So we'll stop there for today. No, let's just play the last three of Canto 2. We'll hear Mother reading some of the later lines of Canto 2. Discoverer Life. Yes.
The magic leveling suddenly its cord that moves the veil in a first timeless wing. A player, a master hand, a king idea can link man's strength to a transcendent force. A flaming warrior on the eternal peak, empowered to force the door denied and closed. Smote from death's visit, its dumb absolute, and burst the bounds of consciousness and time.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.